This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
We're on the escape pod now. It's Mark. Jo is currently in sunny Burnley. She's not joining us today, but we do have Shannon Gillies here, who is going to talk to us about being a journalist in East Timor. This week in travel, not much happened, but Shannon.
Hello.
I'm just paraphrasing. I don't know. Google it.
I like
if you
that. Google stuff.
Yeah, exactly. But you are a... Explain yourself. You're a joy enthusiast.
Or a hobbyist, if you will. So I work in the Joy News team as a newsreader and occasionally work on side projects as a reporter. And I was part of a couple of Joy current affairs shows last year. So Gay News Network, Gay News Week. My God, how bad did that sound? And Worldwide Wave.
So you're the Kerri-Ann Kennelly of Joy 94.9.
Only taller.
Taller and blonder. So in all of that, you are a legit journalist. A lot of us here in community radio are people who are here for very different reasons. We're supporting the community. We like the sound of our own voices. There's lots of different reasons.
Oh, my God,
reasons.
I love the sound of my own voice.
Totes, right?
May right? as well. I would totally do me.
You're actually a journalist.
Yeah, I've been freelancing for the past 2 years, but I've now picked up a... I'm actually moving countries to take up a permanent journalism role back in New Zealand, so...
Well, moving countries.
Moving countries.
We're very, very, you know, it's like going from one of the conjoined twins to the other. We share a liver for the Tasman Sea.
Oh, my God. The poor sea.
Yeah, the poor sea. So you're going back home?
Yeah, so that's happening in a couple of weeks.
And you're very much so a journalist. You're working in journalism here in Australia.
Yeah, so I'm working as an online producer at The Age.
Yeah. And you're going to a journalism job in New Zealand?
At Radio New Zealand, so that should be grand.
So I'm really underscoring the point you're a New Zealander and you're a journalist.
And, you know, as a New Zealander, we're all about the sheep, we're all about pies, we're all about fish.
And chups. Blah, blah, blah.
Blah. All of that.
So journalism today is a really interesting field. Technology has touched it more than most fields. The ability to communicate around the world, the ability to send information from one spot to another, video, high def and so forth, has changed the way journalists work.
Absolutely. The digital world has definitely...
And it shrunk the world, right?
It shrunk the world. Like, you can't do anything at all and not expect it to come up somewhere.
Mm.
So you'll have people who will put something up on Facebook or Twitter, and then it might be there for a couple of seconds, a couple of minutes, whatever.
Even it's if global. It's global. Immediately global.
Once it's on there, it's out there.
Mm.
No matter what you've said. And unfortunately, that actually did come up at the job interview as well. In 2010, I ran for mayor of Auckland.
Did you?
Things that I do.
We've only got an hour.
I know. So I ran for mayor and that came up in the job interview as well. I'm like, oh, the internet.
Oh, those
Why can't I hide things?
No, you can't. So you recently have actually travelled for journalistic purposes, and really interested for you to say, what is journalism like now in 2014 compared to what it was like before? I mean, you're not very old. I mean, you've seen
you're so sweet.
Technology change your workscape so much.
Oh, absolutely.
But how has it changed the nature of being a journalist, what you do, how you do it, and how other people do it, and how you compete, and how have you become a global employee as such?
I think what has happened is I think journalism has always been an incredibly hard occupation to have. You don't become a journalist because you want money or stability or need some sort of social life. So it's always been hard. But I think at the moment, I would say the pressure is even greater than it was back in the 1970s. I get that I wasn't alive in the 1970s. I get that very much.
Yeah, totes.
But with the introduction of the 24-hour news cycle, I think there's lots of pressure put on reporters to always break news. And I think there's less... money is being put into making sure things are fact-checked or making sure that people are putting their best foot forward. I think they just go, right, we're all about getting clicks on websites we're all about getting news out there right now. We've got to beat the other guy. It doesn't matter how informed the story is, how big the story is, as long as we've got a line. So I think there's lots of stress being put on reporters and the editors.
Mm. So how does that, because you then become an international competitor to get a story out, right? Because anybody could sell a story to anybody at any time.
At any time. So you could be in the middle of, say, downtown Melbourne, you're competing with someone who's in downtown Manila.
Mm.
So, I mean, the guys at in the World Cup right now, everyone's going to be having the same story, especially when it comes to photography as well.
Mm.
You know, you've only got a few global photography sites like Reuters and Getty, and you'll be competing against the best. And then, of course, there's always the introduction of things like smartphones where people just like, oh, well,
everyone's a journalist.
Oh, everyone's a journalist. Jesus.
Tweeting
Christ.
On their MyFace pages.
I've got an opinion, therefore it's a fact.
Yeah, exactly.
God.
I've got the right to free speech. You've also got the responsibility to stand
well,
up for what you say.
I don't think
and you've
people
got a legal
that.
Obligation. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, to get things verified or to give, you know, giving someone the right of reply is very important. No matter what you think of that person or whatever they've said, you've got to give them right of reply. And I don't think these so-called citizen journalists or citizen bloggers actually do that.
Hmm. Interesting what happened in the last couple of days with Abbott and his gaffe. How he has been run through the ringer, which I quite enjoy because I don't like I don't like many politicians. I'm certainly not an anti-liberal person per se, but I certainly don't like this guy. But he misspoke, and that became a story, not the essence of what he was talking about. And this is what happens with citizen journalism and how things have been overtaken in comments. What do you think about that as a journalist? Because your story becomes everybody else's once it's published, right?
Yeah, and you lose all control over it. And it's also really important
to make... And the debate.
Yeah. And you know what the context of the situation was, but it doesn't mean the person who's currently then going to take your story actually understands what was going on in the room at the time. And I don't have preferences politically, but my understanding is that Tony Abbott has spent a lot of time in Indigenous communities as well, and I don't think you get to become the leader of a major political party and not have a grasp of your nation's history. That just doesn't happen.
I think they're being appointed from Rome at the moment, but as a journalist, your whole landscape has changed because of this technology, hasn't it?
Yeah,
mm.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, we've understood this point. Now, how does that then factor into... Because journalists may never have been people who got paid a lot of money, but are people who use... to travel a lot for stories. They went to the story. You recently got to do that.
I did, and it was very cool.
Yeah, so tell us about that, because it's very unusual. Now that we've understood the groundwork, anybody can do anything from anywhere from their iPhone. You had to go somewhere. Tell us about that. How did that all eventuate, and what did that mean?
What did that mean so much?
I know, right?
I know.
I'm stroking my imaginary beard.
Oh, my God, I'm stroking... Oh, my God. Sorry, so many things to say. Okay.
Keep it on topic.
All right, so...
Hands above the quilt.
Okay, so ever since I was 24, I've wanted to be a war correspondent, and that's evolved into being a conflict correspondent or a post-conflict correspondent, and that's due to my own family's history in war and how war's impacted us.
How so?
Basically, it's even though we're always on the so-called, or in modern war anyway, we've always been on the side that's won, you wouldn't know it. You know what I mean? Like, people come back and they're changed.
And post-traumatic stress disorder.
Post-traumatic stress disorder ripped through both sides of my family, and it created a whole bunch of animosity between different branches. And it's only now...
Why is that? Because they're European New Zealanders, right? So
yeah.
Are they all from Anglo-Saxon backgrounds, or is it diverse?
One side is Anglo-Saxon, the other side is Anglo-Saxon and Māori.
Oh, okay, right.
A little bit
right.
of Māori. Mm. We're not blood-related, but married. But basically, it's just people would go and do things and act a certain way and act a certain way in the community, and it was okay because they were, you know, a nice guy outside where everybody could see them, but back in the home it was always completely different to that.
Right.
And because in those days you couldn't talk about your feelings, you couldn't talk about what was actually going on.
You had to drink your feelings.
Drink your feelings, right? God, there's never been a bad consequence from that sort of action. God. And so basically the way that's impacted my family is why I wanted to be a war reporter. And also the way that the media, I think, across all countries reports war. I mean, they talk about, they glorify it, I think. They go, look, the soldier's been shot. Oh, and he's returning home. I think we've got a returning Australian serviceman today in a casket. And the way the media reports have been written is, what a brave man, blah, blah, blah. It's like, well, he trained to get into a war zone. He was in probably some horrific circumstances. And I don't think anything's going to change politically because of it. It's not like politicians go, oh, God, people are dying. Let's change how we behave diplomatically.
No.
It's always like they go, oh, look, here, have some fanfare, have a medal. Oh, wow, how beautiful is this? But then they forget about soldiers later on. And my thing is not just about the dead
soldiers. Are mostly cannon fodder from the lower classes. Sorry, I don't mean to get all proletariat here.
No, but it's
But the decisions are made by people who don't send their children to war.
Yeah.
And the major benefit of a war is rarely the people who send their children or who fight at the front lines.
It's resource gathering.
Yeah. It's turf, it's power.
Yeah, and the way they sell...
And it's a handful of people who make those decisions to turn our lovely, fun, football-kicking boys into murderers.
Pretty much. So like they take these decent people and put them in these traumatic circumstances, and when they come back, if they get to come back alive, it's not as though the services that they're offered are going to be particularly grand. And at this current point, there might be, say, counselling services put in place for people. Doesn't mean it's going to be the same case 10 years down the track when they might still need it.
So you wanted to cover this?
Yeah.
Is it because of your political beliefs?
I think basically it's... I don't want to say it's my political beliefs. I want to say it's
You're
more
fascinated.
Of... I'm fascinated with how war works.
And so where did you go?
I went to Timor-Leste and I wanted to see what post-conflict was actually like.
We're going to hear a lot more about that after the break. You're on Joy 94.9. You're listening to Escape Pod with Mark. We've got Shannon Gillies, who is a globe-trotting reporter who has recently come back from East Timor.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLB, TIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
You're with Mark. We're joined by Shannon Gillies, who is a globe-trotting reporter and a member of the Joy family, and who has recently been to East Timor, reporting on post-conflict East Timor. Let's find out some more about East Timor first, because everyone's heard it. People have heard the name Janana Guzmao, and I think a lot to do with that is his. I think his wife is from Melbourne.
Yeah,
and I think they live
Kirsty
here.
Kirsty Sword.
I think they live here part of the time. So there is a relative amount of understanding of East Timor and what that all means. But tell us more about the place and why you were there particularly.
Okay, so Timor-Leste is kind of just a little bit northwest of Australia. So it's just above Darwin, and it's historically been a Portuguese colony for about 500 years, where the Portuguese basically had it to get a whole bunch of sandalwood. Then
What was the use of the sandalwood? Was it perfume or?
I'm not too sure.
Construction, yeah, okay. Anyway, go on.
And basically they share that area with the Dutch, which actually ended up having West Timor.
Oh, the little known West Timor.
Yeah, which is now ruled by the Indonesians.
Yes.
And so for a while there, so when the Dutch decided to, no, sorry, when the Portuguese decided to leave the vicinity, you know, Timor was like, yep, sweet, we've got some independence, fantastic. And the Indonesians were like, no, you don't.
Hang on a minute.
And
news for you.
News for you, not news for the rest of the world. Let's hide that. Mm. And decided to go in and take it over with the basically the go-ahead from Australia, New Zealand, the US, England. It basically approved the invasion. And
to remove Indonesia?
No, to basically allow Indonesia to take over
East Timor.
Yeah.
Okay.
Basically, it was
what
given
year was this?
1975.
Right. Okay.
So on December the 7th.
Nearly 40 years ago, yeah.
Yeah. So also what was important to remember just in the historical context about why this is really important and why it was so important to my trip was a couple of months before that you had five reporters who from Australia who went over to report on the Indonesians doing their sort of like sporadic raids on the border. And they were caught and killed
by the
Indonesians. And there was a whole cover-up and thing to go with that.
They were ABC reporters, weren't they?
ABC.
Right.
One of them was a Kiwi as well.
Okay.
And so part of my trip was to go and see the place where they died, because to me that's a pinnacle moment for safety in the Asia Pacific area for New Zealanders and Australians.
Hmm.
And then, of course, they were followed by Roger East, who went over, and then he was also subsequently killed by the Indonesians.
Hmm.
So that was going on, and now Timor's basically won. The UN went in 99, and they were given a vote for independence, and then people won it. But you've got to remember, this is a time when nobody could really talk to each other. There were militia walking around as well. So if you were remotely pro-independent, you were getting beaten. You know, people that were connected to you were getting picked up and tortured, that sort of thing.
So horribly unstable.
Horribly unstable. And despite the fact that the UN was present. And so, you know, this
with
is before...
strongly worded letters.
Strongly worded letters. Oh, my God. Terrifying, right?
Mm.
And so basically, you're looking at a world where there was no social media. These guys couldn't connect on Facebook and get organised or
okay,
or
let's
use
talk
Twitter.
About the East Timorese people. Are they ethnically similar to Indonesians? Is that what it is? With a Portuguese influence because of colonisation? Is that how you describe them?
I don't think I would. I don't think Timor's ever been Indonesian.
Are they more like Papua New Guinea?
I would closely connect them. Yeah, I'd say Melanese.
Okay. So they speak two languages, right? Portuguese.
Well, they speak so many different languages. So you've got Portuguese from the days of colonial rule. You've got one of the main languages is Tetan, which And then I think there are other sort of regional dialects.
Right.
And then, of course, they speak, is it Bahasa, Indonesian?
Bahasa, yeah.
And they've got that. And then there's a sporadic English everywhere as well.
Mm.
So if you're in Delhi, you'll get the occasional English speaker. But if you're out in the sort of districts, you won't.
Mm.
And I was told by the guy who's giving me a briefing before I went that I didn't need to learn Tetan. And he was horribly, horribly wrong. If you are going to go to Timor-Leste, you will need to try and at least get the very basics of Tetan down.
Right.
Not enough people speak English.
Is it a complex language to understand?
I think it would take you maybe 3 weeks,
right.
4 weeks to pick up.
Yeah.
If you were really concentrating on it, I think you could get it.
Right.
But, yeah, just to rely on English alone, no.
Okay. So, from what I understand, very engaging people, very friendly people.
Very friendly and very patient. So even if you do turn up with, you know, like I did, and playing the stereotypical white person without learning somebody else's language, they will be incredibly
just
patient
yell
with
louder.
You. Yell louder. How much does this cost?
Yeah.
Can I pay with my credit card?
Quanto costo?
Oh, my God. And a phrase book probably also not helpful.
Tap and go. No, not where they're at.
No, not really. But everyone, and they're very interested in you as well.
Are they?
So my idea with setting up interviews there was it would work. Oh, this is so me. I honestly thought it would work the way it does here. So I would call someone up and go, are you ready for an interview at this particular time on this particular day? And they're like, yes. Yes, I will be there. They will be an hour late and they are not ready for an interview because they want to get to know you first. So you'll get asked questions about your family, like, are you married? Why aren't you married? Do you have any children? No. Nope. And then it's not like they judge you. It's kind of, there's more of a pity.
Intrigue.
Yeah.
Oh, pity.
Like, oh, you're not married. Oh, you don't have kids. Oh, oh, you.
You're not that bad.
Doing okay.
Okay, so, well, I think that's a rather charming aspect of the East Timorese, because everyone's favourite subject is themselves, and to have someone sitting there asking all these adoring questions is charming.
Yeah, and I see exactly where they're coming from. I mean, they want to get to know you before they give you any information, which is fair considering how, you know, they were ignored by the West for
quite
25 years of Indonesian occupation, and it's only now that they're beginning to get a little bit of more open reporting. And yeah, I think I was incredibly lucky.
Mm.
Oh, I also got to drink coffee with the person who picked the coffee beans. That was a highlight.
Ah, so coffee's a big...
Yeah, I think that's... Other than oil, I think they're looking at coffee.
And gas,
Yeah, coffee's been their big export.
Right.
But there's still a lot of reliance on oil and, you know, gas, which will run out eventually.
It's a whole problem with it.
God, what?
Finite resource.
Are you saying there's a resource curse?
The finite resource. Let's not use wind or solar because we don't want the sun to go out. So you lob up in East Timor. How easy is it to get there? Is it a place where, as a journalist, of course, speaking through this prism, you can just rock up, or do you need a visa? And how does a tourist work as well? Do you know the difference between... Because I know that some countries are quite challenging with reporters.
Yeah, okay. So here's the deal. So it's the first time I've ever lied on a... on a visa to get in. I did say that, because technically, not really a lie, I did say that I was a chef, so my background is in catering, and that's how I got in. But if I feel if I had put down journalist, then I would have been open.
Red flag.
Yeah, there would have been a red flag. Basically, it's $30 at the border on a tourist visa, and then it's a $10 leaving tax. Mm-hmm. But at the moment, what is proving to be quite controversial is there is a new media law coming in, which is going to put controls on reporters who are there locally. So there is a suggestion that reporters will have to be licensed. But also in that same law, they're not being very specific about what makes a journalist. So you're looking at NGOs getting targeted and other non-profit organisations. Mm-hmm. So they're being put in the same category as, say, someone from Rupert Murdoch's camp. So you've got your nice, friendly, hey, look, I work for the Red Cross, and you've got someone...
from the Death Star.
What?
What's that?
What's that?
What do you mean? What?
What? I have no idea. What are you trying to play? But basically, in this new media law, there it's proposed that they might be able to like block reporters at the border, and you can't work on there unless you have permission from the government, and things like that, so...
Okay, so it's a challenging place, but for a tourist, it's quite easy to get in.
For a tourist, quite easy to get in.
You can find more Joycasts and show blogs. Go to joy.org.au.
Talk to us about East Timor. Were you in Dili?
I was in Dili.
Okay. So what is there to do? Okay, you went there with journalism. Put your tourism hat on.
Oh, my God, there's
you lob
so
up.
Much.
How easy is it to get there? Walk us through the whole experience.
Okay, so... the airport is actually quite, once you get over the fact that you're in this foreign country where you probably didn't learn the language, which you should have done, everyone learned it and it's okay, it will take you 4 weeks. It's incredibly easy. As long as you've organised yourself a driver, you just go in, it'll go to one of the main hotels down.
Is that affordable?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, so what will happen is because if they can, everyone can tell if you're a foreigner, and the term that you'll get very used to very quickly has been called a Malay. And the way they use Malay isn't as a derogatory term, like there's a white person or there's a foreigner, like, oh, goddamn Malay.
Yeah. Guaylo!
It was described to me as a, it's kind of the way that you get excited when you see someone at the bar with a mullet. You might sort of like go to, you know, jab your friend in the ribs and go, look, it's a mullet. It's that sort of way. Oh. It's not said in a mean way. It's just like, look, there's a Malay. So check
more passive aggressive and accusative. Is that how it's
like a mum
mullet?
That person's got a mullet. Okay. Anyway, so it's sort of like the taxi.
I shall believe you.
They should only cost you $1 or $2, but they will charge you more in the first couple of days. So it'll start things like on from $10, anywhere between $5 to $10, you'll get charged.
Okay.
Until you get used to the system and you're like, just Jesus, guys. Just $1, yeah? And the reason why
right,
the currency
okay. So
is...
Yeah, okay.
There are a couple of Tetan coins, of like you've got 25 cents, that sort of thing, but it's the US dollar.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because it's the currency of the UN. So when the UN goes into a country that if it's not stable, if it doesn't have its own currency, the US dollar becomes its default currency.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, you're head into the hotel systems. There are tourist operators. And what Timor is known, there's Tour de Timor, so it's this massive cycling race. There's this marathon around Dili that you can take part in. My God, it's humid. I don't know what you... Oh, my God, there were people running.
Sounds very chafy.
Oh, and 30-plus degree heat, and they're wearing tracksuit, like, pants and tracksuit, like, tops. And you just see going, you guys are insane. Absolutely insane. And, you know, this is early morning stuff, so you'd be walking on your way to work.
Steamy.
Yeah. Yay fitness, but come on. There's a point. And so you've got Tour de Timor as well, and then scuba diving just anywhere around the island.
Okay.
Basically, I got...
It's a beautiful fish. It's all that tropical thing.
It's just
with
amazing.
The great temperature water.
Temperature water. I, you know, the person I was with was like, this is incredibly cold, but I guess because I'm originally from Wellington, New Zealand, cold doesn't really exist. It's just a It's just a way of life, really. You don't have a choice.
It's a state of mind.
State of mind. But I'm, but it's so gorgeous. Like, I hadn't been scuba diving for about 12 years. And then to be there, and you're just like, it's you, it's the fish, and you're like in the school of like the Nemo type fish. Like, oh it's great.
Keep on swimming, keep on swimming. Oh, that was the Ellen one.
Oh, I kid you not. There was lots of Nemo clown quotes fish going on in my mind. And then, you've got that, and of course the you've got Mount Ramala, which is the highest mountain in the state of Timor. And actually,
is it volcanic?
Not that I know. No, it's not. It's also the highest point in the Portuguese Empire as well. I'm like, okay. Jesus, you had to go to Timor to get there. And you climb that for a nice sort of like sunrise. Fantastic. And of course it's also the Jesus Christ statue, which is in the Monte Cristo beach, and it's this is what I got told, it's like 27 meters high because the Indonesians saw it as Timor is the 27th state, so they decided to make this giant Jesus statue at the top of this point.
Right, they were clutching at 27 straws at the time.
Pretty much going, I'm sure they love us, I'm sure the people of Timor want us to stay, like the people of West Papua want them to stay.
Fair enough. So going to East Timor, yes or no as a tourist attraction?
Yes, okay. Go. And go now before it gets totally discovered by tourist operators.
And there's a W Hotel.
Oh, Jesus, or another Hilton, my God.
Yeah.
But no, at the moment, it's affordable. The locals, it's generally, you're hanging out, you're actually having a foreign experience. It's not like you go to sort of like Bali or Barcelona and you're definitely getting the tourist experience. Right now, you are getting a Timor-Leste experience.
Okay.
And of course, there are coffee farm plantation trips you can do, which are incredibly awesome. And unfortunately, I'm a little bit macabre. And so and a lot of it was for work, but then a lot of it was personal sort of like things I wanted to see. And so I ended up going to a couple, of course, the Balibo house where the reporters were killed. But I went to a couple of mass grave sites as well, which had been uncovered.
Oh.
Which was just, I know.
So you're really mixing it up.
Really mixing it up. Scubaing. War crime sites.
Is it fair enough to say that East Timor has been scarred by conflict, and is that a part of what defines it, or do you think the East Timorese people and the current society has moved on that, and that's just a part of our fascination? What would you...
I would say Timor isn't necessarily... I'd say they have learned to adapt, and I think they're scarred more by the fact that the rest of the world didn't care.
Right.
It's not so much, I think, of course, what the Indonesians did, they were terrible, they were war crimes that no one has actually ever answered for. The International Criminal Court, you know what, it does come across as a club for white guys.
Right.
And of course, it's only there to persecute, say, people in Africa or the occasional person in Eastern Europe. But it's
basically... Finally, advantage for the white man.
Oh, finally. Someone's thinking of the white guy.
Won't someone think of the white man?
Damn my white privilege. Mm. But I'd say Timor's basically scarred by... been let
neglect
down.
Or a sense of abandonment
a
by
sense of
the
abandonment, and they understand that if they're going to get anything, I think they know they've got to work together, and I think that's part of the country's psyche, they know it's them against the world. And but they're still really patient and loving, so they're willing to
speaks
help
to their nature.
So I think they're taking the higher road.
Are you making this sound like a really good place to go and explore and spend your Turo dollars?
I know, right? You'll be fine. Like, it's depending on which hotel you stay at as well. I mean, shop around.
So what's accommodation like? Is it accessible? Is it all online?
It's all online. So basically, your cheapest night will be about maybe $20 at a backpacker's. Your more expensive one will be about $110 a night.
Okay. It's all affordable?
It's all affordable. And there is enough services that you can actually get around the island. So it's, I would say go now before it becomes another Bali.
Okay. Well, I hope it doesn't become another Bali. Bali's enough.
Yeah. And talking to a couple of the tourist operators there, they are looking at trying to make it more of a green tourism system. That's
good.
Yeah. That's what they want to do, is they want to use their ecosystem as its tool, because once oil and gas runs out, they don't really, at the moment, like projection-wise, I think the only classic route to go is it will have to be tourism. It's kind of like New Zealand relies heavily on tourism.
Right.
I think Fiji does as well. I think most of the Melanesian sort of Pacific Islands do that, so that'll be where they go.
Interesting. If you've been to Timor-Leste, which is Portuguese, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, look at me. I'm so fancy with my Portuguese. Yeah, and watching the World Cup, you know, hear the brilliant Brazilian.
Oh, my God.
Billions of. Well,
every time, like, the Portuguese were playing, like, they were, I was doing this interview, and these kids were, like, racing up the street on this motorbike, and, like, four of them, like, with this massive Portuguese flag.
Oh, really?
So I'm talking to someone about human rights abuses, and all of a sudden you hear these kids outside going, yeah, Portugal. And then, like, the taxi drivers all had, like, these Portugal, like, soccer photos taped up in their cars.
Oh, inside the roof of the car.
Amazing. Like, if I wasn't sharing a taxi with a goat, I was sharing a taxi with, like, a Portuguese mad taxi driver.
Hold that thought. I want to hear more about your goat travails.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
I'm Mark. We're on the Escape Pod. Big hello to Joe, who is currently in sunny Burnley. And today we've got Shannon Gillies on. We have a joyster. You're an enthusiast of the Joy Station. You're a journalist. You've done a lot of travel in your life. You've been a lot of places. And you've recently been at East Timor. So give us a snapshot about food, smells, what it was like. You got off the plane in East Timor. You got in a cab with a goat. Give us a rundown on what it feels like to be there, because if you've been to Bali, it's not the same, right? Maybe other Indonesian islands, maybe. What? Tell us.
Okay, so you think that, you know, that it's going to feel unsafe because everyone's like, oh no, former conflict zone, oh no. And you're, you know, this white little Western girl, it's just going to be horrific. It was absolutely warm and lovely and, this, oh my God, street cows. That's right, street cows.
A street cow named Desire.
Oh my God. All right, so just to sum up what it was like, really, just driving around on Timor roads, because to use the term road, I think road is a really strong word. Sometimes half-built track or sometimes no track at all, depending on where you're driving. So one of the local editors is driving me along, and he's getting far more aggressive because, you know, parts of the road are missing. And but there are all these goats going onto the road at the same time. And Emmanuel,
what are the goats for? Are they livestock or are they just wild?
Livestock.
Right.
I think if you, I think the Lonely Planet guide says that if you kill someone's goat with your car, I think you basically, the idea is don't drive off because someone has seen you, hang about, get yelled at for a good hour, and just pay them $20 to, like, pay for a new goat. Because you basically fair just enough. Take out this person's sort of, like, source of revenue.
Livelihood, yeah.
So basically, yeah, so we're driving along and all these goats start coming on the road and Manuel's like, oh, God damn it, goats. And then I get this massive elbow in the side and he goes, Shannon, third world problem. You know how there's that, like, first world problem meme? He's
right.
Like, oh, goats on the road, third world problem.
Gosh darn it, look at us.
He's so cute. So
I think it's called emerging nations now.
Developing economies.
Yeah.
No, it's absolutely gorgeous in the sun, and it was the best walk to work.
Yeah.
Oh, my God, and the food.
Well, we've had a couple of SMSs in. Thank you very much, everyone who's SMSing in. Thank you very much for Des. Apparently now the trams are running back down Collins Street. There was a bit of a kerfuffle before, and thanks,
listen,
Des,
listen, people,
for
you're
know.
Lucky to have trams and a street.
Yeah, goat-free trams. But thanks, Des, for letting us know. That's great. So if anyone was worried about getting up and down Collins Street on a tram, ding, 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 goes the trolley. Off you go.
Maybe ride a goat. Who knows? Yeah. Maybe that's going to be more punctual.
Don't have a name here, but we do have a phone number ending in 168. Thank you for SMSing in. What's the food like in Timor? Last day. That's a really good point, because Portuguese food is awesome.
Portuguese food is awesome, but here's the thing. I asked about the culinary scene in Timor, like, what was Timor-Leste's, you know, gastronomic delights? And most people just looked at me like, no, that just doesn't exist. There was a cooking show at some point which did try and delve into it, but it didn't really last. I mean, nobody could actually name the name of the cooking show. But basically what you've got is you've got lots of Portuguese influence, you've got lots of Indonesian influence.
Tell us about them.
Okay, so I ate so much nasi goreng.
Okay, so rice.
So lots of rice.
Spice rice. Cooked in oil.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very oily.
Yeah. What about like Portuguese chicken? Like, I'm seeing Nando's.
Fantastic. No, I did get a mix of Portuguese tarts, so.
And did you eat any pastries?
Oh, my God.
See what I did there.
This is terrible. It's like I stopped going to the gym 2 months ago. It's horrific.
You and your Portuguese tart.
Oh, my God. So, you're a Portuguese tart. And the coffee scene is amazing. I have not had a bad coffee in Timor-Leste. Despite what everyone says about Melbourne's coffee scene, there have been moments where it could be better. Dilly, developing economy, emerging from conflict, Not one bad
awesome
coffee.
Awesome coffee.
Awesome coffee.
That's great news.
Jesus, Melbourne, step up your game.
Step up your game. Tim Honesto is breathing down your neck.
Good God, it's amazing.
So good question. Thanks for asking that. So was chicken the meat staple? Was it goat?
Fish.
Fish. Oh, yeah, of course, you're an island.
Oh, my God. That was excellent amazing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think every fish meal I had was fantastic. And then we were driving off, like when we were going scuba diving, the guide ahead, Emily. So we're driving by and she spots, I didn't even see them, like a couple of kids in like this like sort of like roadside forest area. Mm. She hands them like a dollar and we get this bag of like some sort of tree fruit. It's like, it was like flavorless lychees, but it still kind of worked. So you still had to like chip off like these bits of wood around this sort of like fleshy thing.
Mm.
But yeah. Oh my God, I ate something off the side of a road. Those stories don't usually end well,
was
but surprisingly,
no,
no, it's type of fruit. I tell you what, I did not get any food poisoning at all.
Okay,
it
so
only happened
hygiene's
when I got,
good?
Hygiene, I would say. Mm. Oh, like, I think if you're in the main centres, totally, but then always take those precautions. Always
yeah,
take,
of course,
you know, gastro-stoppers with you and things. Mm. I went to this coffee farm plantation thing, and we were just walking around the very bottom of it, and we come across this really, like, it's this random waterfall. It was amazing. And then I'm just going, this is such a moment. And I talked to the guides. I'm like, look, do you mind? Are we able to drink water from this stream? And they're just like, sure. If you've got the durability of an East Timorese woman or man, then sure, you drink away. Or if not, maybe no.
But maybe have a Coke and a smile and shut the fuck.
Oh, and you can buy this thing called palm wine on the side of the road.
Palm wine. Talk to me about palm wine.
Okay, so it's kind of like a
wine
better,
made from palm?
Yes, but a better version of kava.
Okay.
If kava was to improve, and I'm not saying that
so
it needs
sparkling.
To. Yeah, it's sparkling.
Okay.
And I'm just sitting going, this is, it was okay. It wasn't horrific.
Okay, I'm intrigued.
You can find more Joycast and show blogs. Go to joy.org.au.
We've got Shannon Gillies here, a globetrotting journalist, recently been to East Timor. Dilly pouncing around that part of the
I
world.
I see what you did.
Journalisming.
Journalisming it up.
So you were journalisming everywhere.
Yeah, I was amongst it. Mm. Not going to lie to you.
You were dropping it like it's hot. So
yeah.
What was the story like coming out of East Timor? Tell us what you learned. Tell us what you reported.
Okay, so far what I've reported on has been the changes to the media law. And, of course, there was a story. I got to meet a couple of former Australian soldiers who basically went to Africa after their time there during 2012 with the UN and helped fight poachers in Africa. There's a story waiting to go on the upcoming Indonesian elections and how the people of Timor-Leste feel about that. And, yeah, basically what it was like going through the UN withdrawal and also how does a nation rebuild after
yeah.
war, after conflict? So that is waiting to go somewhere at some point.
Are the resources there in East Timor that to get them there? I mean, they've got a lot of natural resources, but they're finite.
They're finite. Like, I think what happens is, I think on the surface, if everyone was shooting for the same goal, and I think this goes with every country, if everyone was actually shooting for the same goal of, we want to make sure the economy is fine, we want to make sure there's a health system, we want to make sure that people...
Education
is a good go. If everyone stuck to that game plan, like everyone says they do, then, it'd be fine. It'd be shooting all of those goals. But then, of course, there are certain people in
competing
certain places...
Interests.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Like everywhere, I guess. But would you go back?
Yes.
Yeah. What was your favourite thing? All the memories from your time there, including not being able to find any tonic for your gin.
Oh, my God. There was a tonic water shortage.
Yeah.
Horrific.
Harrowing. I'm glad the UN was there.
Oh, thank God.
Yeah, what was your favourite memory? What do you take away as your number one?
I'm taking away a group of friends that I've made.
Mm-hmm.
And I really do miss hanging out right by the beach. In the mornings, I miss the lovely locals who would bring me responsibly served glasses of vodka.
Served is not responsibly consumed.
Who are we to say? just an example of how awesome it was. Like, basically, my budget was getting into... Because I got stranded because of the... there was a volcanic eruption and the ash cloud that went over Dili Airport forced me to stay in Darwin, so I had to spend a bit more money there than I thought I ever would.
Mm.
And... So basically, I was running a bit short of cash, and I bumped into a couple of English teachers in this cafe, and I was asking them for directions to this medical clinic. And we got to talking and stuff, and they basically said, hey, you know what? You're spending too much on accommodation. Why don't you just stay at ours?
Fantastic.
And then basically, I had free accommodation for about 3 days.
Awesome.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.